It's Wednesday, October 29th, 2008, and you're listening to episode 121 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 55 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
And I'm back.
Yay.
I've heard that about you.
All right, Chris, you got an announcement. Go ahead and say it.
I do. I've got two announcements.
Save the other one. It's. We'll get to that when it's relevant.
Okay. My first announcement is, now I know we've talked on the podcast before about the merits and lack thereof of playing diplomacy, but I have always been a proponent of the game. I love playing the game. It's a fun game to play. As long as you go into it knowing what you're getting into, you can usually come out on the other end still friends with those you played with. As opposed to other times when you can, you know, people don't speak and it can turn to violence and it can get nasty.
I've never played this game. It sounds awesome.
I don't think it'd be a good game for me.
No, I don't think so either.
Chad, you've never played diplomacy?
No. Actually, Chris, I absolutely love board games and I love games of all kind. And actually, the reason I love playing role-playing games is because I love games. And I think that stems all the way back to the fact that I was an only child and I had this drawer full of board games. I would always ask for board games and I had no one to play them with.
I had the same problem, so I just ended up playing with myself.
Oh!
And he still plays today.
I've wanted to play games like diplomacy. I've just never had a group to play with. But I hear you have an answer.
Oh, I do, as a matter of fact. And by the way, it's a blast and a half. I mean, it really is. It's a lot of fun. But one of the forum users, Bones87 is his handle. He is attempting to get together an online group for those who are interested in playing diplomacy, of which I am. But of course, you need a certain number of players to play the various countries in the game. So if you are interested and don't normally surf the forums and want to try and play a little diplomacy, go into the RPG role-playing games thread on the forums and look for the diplomacy sub-thread there, and that's where you can find out and contact Bones about playing. Or you can just send me an email, and I can also direct you to the right location.
I'll link it off the show notes as well. Just keep it easy. Worldwide Wing Night 5 coming up Saturday, November 8th. Once again, I'll link this in the show notes. We have people who have been kind enough to put together a list of all the different Worldwide Wing Night locations in various cities all over the U.S. and possibly even some outside of the U.S. So I will link to that. Go check that if you're looking for Worldwide Wing Night near you. And if you're willing to come to St. Louis, we're still, you know, we'd be very happy to see you come out here. Fear the Con coming up. You can now find details on warhorn.net/fearthecon.
Fear the Con 2.
I am also going to try to get the domain name Fear the Con working and redirecting to that. So if you're lazy, try just typing in fearthecon.com.
Have you registered that?
Yeah, I do own it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if it was like some
I do own it. So you can try that. That may or may not work by the time the show drops. I'm going to get that working eventually. But in the meantime, you can definitely get there through warhorn.net/fearthecon. If you're looking to come to Fear the Con this year and you're struggling a little bit to try and figure out how you're going to get up here because you live in another state or something like that, you know, with the gas prices being what they are, there are people that are right now trying to put together caravans from various places where folks that live down in Tennessee or Mississippi or wherever are trying to carpool and split the gas price to drive together up to Fear the Con. If you're interested in doing that, I will link a thread off of our show notes where people are putting together those caravans. So if you want to come, but you just need some people to carpool with to split the gas price, then definitely go and check that out because you do not want to miss Fear the Con. It was a blast last year. And this year
it's times two.
Actually, it's like that's times right. four. Two times it's twice four. As big and twice as long.
That's right.
That's what she said.
Yeah. I'll just leave that alone.
All right, Chris, go ahead with the other announcement because now we're in a relevant place.
All right. Yes. This is also occurring on the forums. Noble Bear was kind of looking for an event for new players / new gamers. And, you know, normally at cons, that kind of stuff doesn't really happen as well, especially when you get to a smaller scale cons such as this. You don't necessarily get a lot of noobs there. But we're trying to gauge some interest to see if there are either brand new players or players who are, you know, nearly new, barely legal gamers, basically, to see if there's interest in sitting down with a bunch of other people of your relative skill level and, you know, playing some games. Because sometimes, of course, you know, when you have new players sitting at a table full of veterans, there's a big intimidation factor, and it could also turn you off to the game. But what we want to try and do is maybe run an event or two where it's just for new players, where they can just kind of have some fun and sit with people who are of their own skill level. So go into the Fear the Con thread, check it out. It's the thread title is like a humble gaming request or something like that.
Yeah.
And let us know if you indeed are interested or if running an event like that would make you want to come to Fear the Con or to bring your significant other to Fear the Con. If there's enough interest, we'll make sure that we get a couple events going and people to run them.
That thread is something else I'm going to link off the show notes. And actually what we're going to do is probably the same thing we did last year. Once we get another month or two of planning under our belts, we'll put together a bonus episode just so we're not always having these big blocks of announcements, where we'll try to just cover everything all at once. So then in subsequent announcements, we can just remind you guys to go back to that episode or to the Warhorn site to get your information. You'll just have to excuse us while we're in this kind of early stage, yeah, still getting this it all
is,
together.
This is our post-Gen Con decompression. We're over that now. And now our next big project is Fear the Con. So there is actually a lot of movement on this. I mean, if you look at the forums right now, the public forums, there's, you know, a couple people talking about it and, hey, wouldn't it be nice if... There's actually a whole lot of planning going on behind the scenes right now. So we're not quite at a place yet where we can start putting up websites and taking volunteers and taking GMs, but that is going to be very soon.
Right.
Start thinking about that. Start thinking about if you're coming to Fear the Con and you might want to help us volunteer, run concessions, be a bouncer, you know, or whatever, then... Yeah, start thinking about that. Especially if you want a GM, because that is something that we'll desperately need, is we'll need a lot of GMs.
One last thing real quick before we get into the meat of the show is this past week, some of you guys that come out to our site may have noticed that the front page blog has completely changed, that it is no longer the Libsyn site. We now have it on our own site, and you can find it either going to feartheboot.com/FTB, or if you just go to feartheboot.com and click the big old Fear the Boot link button there, that'll take you to it as well. Now, something we want to do with this blog that we actually just kicked off is we want to use the blog as more than just a landing place for the shows, which is how we've pretty much used it in the past. We actually want to start filling that with articles that are going to be all over the place, just anything geek related. It could be stuff on comic books, role-playing game advice, game reviews, movie reviews, just random rants, who knows what. Some of this is going to be coming from the hosts. Some of this is going to be coming from friends of the show. And there are also some folks within the gaming industry that I'm going to try and tap for some articles. So over the coming weeks, keep an eye on that blog, because we want to start making that sort of a separate product that has value all its own apart from the show. In fact, Chris went ahead and kicked it off with a preview article on the Skies of Glass webcomic, which will have been out for about a week by the time this show drops. And in the coming days, I'm going to try and put up a lot more stuff, either from myself, from other people we know.
And this is going to be beyond just, we recorded today, you know, we had this to eat, Chad got really drunk. It's actually going to be, you know, relevant, like I said, non-game related stuff. We're going to try and get different contributor.
Pat spoke
today. Yeah, Pat spoke.
Well, that'll still probably go in there, because that is pretty major.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true.
All right, let's dig into it.
Oh, we're also going to have RSS feeds on the articles too, right?
Yeah, it's already up there.
Okay.
You can find the RSS feed in the upper right corner if you go up there. So let's dig into it. The first thing we are going to wrestle with is a question that
not each other.
Chris and I have been kind of soul searching on, which is, why upgrade? Now, if you look at most things in life, like your TV, your video game system, there's a pretty compelling reason to upgrade it every so often, because it doesn't work right anymore.
Or it's that little green spot in the lower right hand corner that gets a little bit bigger.
It doesn't consume the current media. But role-playing games aren't like that. You can play, theoretically, a first edition of a game, any game, as long as you want.
Why buy fourth edition when you can buy used copy of Chainmail?
Well, it's why buy. And I don't want to just make this a D&D thing. Now, for me, the two things got me thinking about this. Thing number one was I've been asked, and a guy asked on our Libsyn blog, which just disappeared, so you won't be able to find this post, but a guy
kind of, and you've actually made it all up. It's a huge conspiracy.
Yeah, nobody will ever be the wiser.
But even if we did make it up, it's still truth.
But a guy was asking about why more podcasters, and I don't know what other podcasters he's referring to, so I don't want to name any, but why have not more podcasters, us included, upgraded to D&D 4th edition? The second thing that brought this to mind,
the last time I've played D&D.
Well, I've actually played D&D not all that long ago, and I personally, the guy actually kind of implied that we don't like D&D, which is not true at all.
Somebody on the forums, there was a discussion about D&D that I hopped into, and somebody told me, I don't even remember the tone or the exact question, but basically within his response, he's like, but, you know, Chad, you really hate 4th edition. And I'm like, I do? I've never even touched it.
The only thing I can think where people are getting that from is we tend to kind of crack jokes about D&D because we're trying to stop
our guy.
Well, and it's too easy of an example.
Yeah.
So we try to steer ourselves away from talking about D&D because it's the obvious example for everything. And we don't want to just be beating a dead horse with that. And then
we have other dead horses to beat.
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, the second thing that got me to thinking about this was, you know, the realization. And this was hardly a new realization, but just one of these thoughts that carousels around in my mind every so often, and it made its way back to the forefront, is a lot of my knowledge of the gaming industry is very out of date, which is one of the reasons why I've started picking up newer games like Hunter the Vigil, rather, New World of Darkness. I'm picking up Burning Wheel and Burning Empire and all that kind of stuff. But I got to thinking about, it's like, okay, to some extent, I can say I have a quote-unquote job-related reason to want to do this. Because sitting here on the podcast, it'd probably help if
this is the worst-paying job ever.
Oh, it is. But, you know, it'd probably be helpful if I had broader experience and exposure to newer games and newer ideas. It just helped the discussion. But as a player, let's say for a minute we did not make this podcast. If we are perfectly happy sitting there playing games out of the 1980s, what is our compelling reason to run out and pick up anything that's brand new? And we came up with a couple. But before we get to the reasons why you would want to, let's talk about the why. Yeah, I'm waving the screwdriver and Chad's backing up. But let's talk for a few minutes about why you wouldn't want to.
Whatever you say, man. I'll go with you.
Hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, if you like the edition you're playing, if you like the rules edition that you're playing and the game that you're doing, you know, why bother? I mean, what really is the point? If you have a creative enough group amongst your core gaming group, there is no real, and everyone's happy, there's no real motivation to do this. I mean, because then you can, you know, you can rotate the GM chair, everybody's got new ideas, we're all familiar with the rules, so we're all comfortable with each other, we know enough of each other, how we all work together, how to work the rules, massage the rules, we're good with it. What really is the point?
So wait, what we're asking is why not?
Well, we're covering both sides of the debate.
Yeah.
Right. And my argument in this particular case is there is no reason to, because you're all comfortable. You're comfortable and you're happy.
Well,
So there's no motivation to do so.
But we need change.
Yeah. Well, here's my issue with the additions is, because as everyone knows, and this is a horse I beat death, I don't really give a crap about the rules. But there's a whole setting issue. I mean, when you're talking about D&D, there's an applied setting, but nobody really follows. Well, I guess nobody really follows that anyway. But say you're doing something with a setting where when they switch editions, yeah, there's rules changes and they change the class types and they go from dice pools to no dice pools and all that good stuff. But what happens if they A, completely revamp the story to something you don't like, or they advance the chronology or the history of whatever it is. They advance time and they advance the story and you don't like where they advanced it to.
Or maybe it even contradicts what you've been running in your game.
Exactly.
That if in your game you've allowed the characters to change the setting.
Yeah, you've gone forward 10 years and then all of a sudden they release an edition that goes forward 10 years. And
yeah, it's like, by the way, 7 years ago, the
the dragon you guys killed is now the emperor of the universe.
Yeah.
It's like,
you know, and that creates a difficult problem, because as a gamer, there's a number of things that you enjoy. A, you enjoy the game you're playing, you enjoy the world that you're playing in, especially if it's a published setting. And B, you like being loyal to the game company because it's fun to go to a store. It's always fun to pick up new product just to look and see. And so if they do that, Chad, if they make that change, suddenly really you're kind of torn, because you want to keep buying the stuff from the company because you like the game line and you feel you should support it. And it's fun to buy new books. But then again, you kind of inwardly know, I'm not going to use these books because I don't like what they're doing with the world.
What about a different take on that concept? And I'm not pointing fingers here. Maybe I am at Games Workshop, but that's a different story. What happens if they release an edition of the game and you feel it's too soon? Or there's this sense within the community that, well, the last edition, that was just planned obsolescence. You know, they put it out there, they hyped it up, and they got us to buy all this great stuff, and we have tons of, we had fun with it. And then a couple years later, they changed everything, and then they're hyping it. It's like, buy more stuff, buy more stuff, buy more stuff. And it's like, well, wait, I bought a bookshelf for all the stuff I bought. Now you want me to set it on fire? What in the end? I mean, changing editions is a very tricky thing. You want to advance your plot. You want to update and your rules and correct any mistakes or any big holes in the rules or whatever. But on the other hand, people don't want to feel like they're getting screwed.
Right. And that's something that I want to make sure I'm clear about, is we're kind of trying to play devil's advocate on both sides here, that I'm not against updating one's gaming library, picking up new editions. And in a minute here, I want to start talking about reasons why it would be good to update games, or why you would want to go.
Because trees suck and we need more books.
But I was trying to think back, like, through my own personal gaming history, because there was a time back in the mid 90s. I mean, we joke about the 80s, but in truth, I mean, this was really more 10 years ago, not 20 years ago. But there was a time when I can take like BattleTech or something, where every single time a new source book came out, Chad and I would walk some obscene distance up to a place called Walden Books, where we would go and we'd thumb through them and buy a lot of them. Every time a new novel came out, we were at least curious to see what it was about, and there's a good chance that we would end up buying it. Mm-hmm. And through that, I ended
or
up
steal
with
it.
Tons and tons of.
I mean, I didn't say that,
but we ended up with tons and tons.
Borrow it for an extended
source books, and the same thing was true with D&D. There was a time when, you know, every time something from D&D came out, and this was in the TSR days, I couldn't possibly keep up with it. I mean, no one was that wealthy.
No one could.
But I did still, nonetheless, pick up quite a bit of stuff, and I can remember with BattleTech, the point where I stopped buying was when they took the plot and the feel of the game in a direction I didn't like anymore.
Right.
Didn't at that point in time, didn't you though inwardly feel bad about stopping picking up the book?
You know, I think as a ravenous,
because they had writers like Chris Hussey, and who wants to support him?
Yeah.
And that guy sucks. But, I mean, he's a worthless hack, and he really shouldn't be doing anything in the gaming industry if they want to keep people in.
I think
in.
Actually, though, Chris, the thing was, being such a rabid fanboy of the game versus the company, yeah, I was more angry about the direction they were taking the game than I was upset about the condition of the company.
Yeah.
But the end result was, because we didn't like the game anymore, we stopped buying it and just kept replaying our old stuff.
Look what happened to FASA. We pulled our dollars out and crashed.
See, and you know what, though? Though that wasn't directly responsible for FASA's demise, it does bring about a good point of, you know, for companies, you got to really be careful with what you're going to do with the world. I remember, and I never really played the game, but I heard enough stories. Games Workshop kept redoing Traveler. Every new book was essentially almost a brand new rule system. And I remember hearing stories about when they'd have seminars at Gen Con talking about this particular new version that was coming out, and people literally got up and walked out of the seminar in disgust because of what they were doing, because they were revamping everything. And, you know, it becomes very, like you said, like you're talking about, Dan, it becomes very frustrating as a
and
player.
Games Workshop is really known for that, for doing that sort of thing of, I mean, it's a balance you have to strike. I mean, there's rules and stuff, and the rules aren't perfect and people get new ideas and ways of doing it better and you want to improve it. And then the story, you have new ideas and directions you want to take your story that just cannot be presented in the form of a supplement that you really changes the direction and feel of the game. And, you know, honestly, sitting here as jaded and as cynical as society has kind of become about corporate culture, I find it really difficult to believe that role-playing game corporations, you have a bunch of guys in business suits sitting around smoking cigars and they're all fat and they say, nah, 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 how can we screw our customers today? And, you know, it's I just don't see that. I see people, and I'm not an industry insider, so I don't know, but I see people who love the game and love working in the industry, and they either have something that they believe in, which is the new change, it's the next edition, it's what the changes they want to push, and they believe everybody else will latch into it, or they're like, well, this is going to be a gamble, and we don't know how it's going to turn out, and then they kind of throw it out there and see what happens.
Right. You know, this is kind of a good point to bridge into the why you would want to update something. Let me tell you, in contrast to my story with BattleTech, let me tell you the story of my experience with D&D. When I first started playing D&D, it was in the time of second edition AD&D. You know, the cover with the guy riding through the rocky mm-hmm. valley with his, yeah.
With the weird hand. The one hand is, like, not right.
Well, he's got, like, the wings on his helmet. I don't know
that too.
What else he had. But
the horse is a little bulky.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but
you know what? I like that cover.
The big old smile.
Was, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
very dynamic and adventurous.
Yeah. But too. That's when I picked up D&D, that was the edition that was out. And I got a bunch of second edition AD&D supplements and modules, and I got the Forgotten Realms setting and so on and so forth. When third edition came out, at first I was a little hesitant because I didn't want to go out and re-spend my money. But some guys I knew went out and picked it up, and this was a little bit prior to, you know, me being really active with role-playing game stuff on the internet. So my only source of information really was from friends. But you can imagine in today's day and age, this could just as easily have been a forum conversation. But they were able to make the case to me of why third edition was genuinely better than second edition. How they had improved things, some ways they had balanced the classes better, some ways in which they'd kind of streamlined the game, and they were able to make the case to me why third edition genuinely was worth my money. It was an improvement on second edition. It wasn't just me re-spending my money.
But that was an easy one, too, because you're just dealing with rules. You're not dealing with a wind shift, a culture change, a plot change.
Well, I mean, the because of the novels and such, the settings had changed. I mean, for example, in Forgotten Realms, which is the one I run the most, you'd had that whole thing of, you know, where the gods got cast down and a bunch of them got killed and a bunch of new ones ascended and, you know, the Time of Troubles and all that sort of stuff. So there were some plot changes, some of which I was not happy with, some of which I thought were okay. But yeah, nonetheless, I mean, yeah, okay, a lot of what I was dealing with there was rules, because third edition was close enough to second edition, you could kind of fudge converting a lot of the stuff on the fly and still play with it. But nonetheless, I made that transition. But I never picked up 3.5, and I have not yet picked up fourth edition. Well, and somebody kind of took me to task on it. Why haven't I? And as I sat there and thought about it...
You run a major gaming podcast. You should have this and run it all the time.
Well, say, and perhaps simply for the academic purposes, I should have it. But as a gamer, purely speaking as a gamer here, not as a podcaster, really what it came down to was no one has yet made a compelling case to me as to why I ought to upgrade. No one has yet really said to me, look, if you switch to fourth edition, here is why your gaming experience would be better than if you played the exact same game using the third edition
rules. You know what's weird? Isn't that the job of a marketing department, though?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
well, absolutely. That's the job. I mean, you're getting to sort of to the whole crux of the industry itself. I mean, the point of Wizards of the Coast, they're thinking, well, we got to make money. And it's not quite the, you know, it's not necessarily the how are we going to screw the players mm-hmm. aspect. But at the same time, they're a company, just like all these other companies, they, you know, they have to put out new product to stay in business, whatnot. So they've got all these play testers that they get these ideas and they do this kind of stuff and they come up with new things. And you sort of hit on the things that I've been wanting to for the last, say, 20 minutes come in and talk about, Dan, is the fact that, like with D&D, I look at it largely, almost exclusively as it, the difference between the editions is it's just a rule set as opposed to a setting shift. Now, again, I think there is maybe some minor setting shifts in like what you had sort of said. But generally speaking, I think that, you know, from second to third to three and a half to fourth edition, it's just basically we're changing some of the classes. We're changing the rules. We're changing how the dynamics of the game are played, the basics of the game are played. So it's not like you're like with the FASA and the BattleTech and some of the other things that just get changed because they've changed years. So I think I think we're looking at sort of two different two different ways of or discussion points there. So for me, just talking about the fourth edition update, it's just more like a rules update. And I actually had my first experience with fourth edition this previous weekend. My original DM that I've mentioned before has been playing in a fourth edition campaign down at his gaming store locally. And so this weekend we were down for a War Machine weekend in Springfield, Missouri, and I got together with him and we just ran through a one shot adventure. You know, it was a little pre canned adventure, just threw together some characters real quick to just go through this adventure. And I have to say, I really enjoyed it. I didn't know what I was going to think because it's got this whole thing of the cards that you can sort of use for your abilities. And I thought, well, this is going to be kind of awkward. But it was fun. I had a good time. It was enjoyable. And that brings me to another point. I think another thing that they've done with fourth edition, and of course, you know, don't flame me, people, because I've only had one session's worth of experience with it. But I freely admit that. But the whole concept of, you know, you've got these cards, and I know Penny Arcade sort of touched on it in one of their cartoons, and the fact that I think they're trying to introduce the sort of the concept, a quasi concept of a small using cards, you know, using the concept of playing cards in your D&D game to sort of mesh those two real popular worlds, because everybody knows the collectible card game industry is huge. Everybody loves it kind of thing. So they're trying to sort of mesh it there. And I think it's just sort of updating with the times, because, you know, the young kids, they love their collectible card games, you know.
You know, and we did that, you know, we did that War Machine role-playing game, not the official one, but the one where we kind of hacked away, or Josh hacked away at the rules to make the War Machine tabletop game and kind of convert it to a role-playing game. Uh-huh. And then since he was doing more of the tabletop, he turned the cards into our character sheets. And that worked really well. I really enjoyed that aspect of it. You have like a, 3-inch by 2-inch little character sheet, and that's really all you need.
It's really all you need.
As long as it's not collectible. See, that's what I hate about it. But see,
Pat, you brought up a couple of good points, in the sense when you mentioned your local gaming store running a fourth edition thing. You know, our local gaming store up here, they run gaming events 2 days out of the week, and one of them is D&D, and they make it very clear in their weekly emails they send out, it's fourth edition. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't play fourth edition. I did try it once, just like you did. I went down and I did a one shot thing. I, again, like you, thought it was all right, but I don't have any motivation to switch over for a couple of other reasons, which we might get to later. But if I want to go and play D&D and try and meet new people at my, you know, FLGS, I'm going to have to know how to play fourth edition, or at least have some sort of basic understanding of it, if I'm going to want to actually sit down with these people. And they may not necessarily want to hold my hand through this, you know? So therein itself is another motivation to upgrade. If you want to meet new gamers in this particular game and new players, you're going to have to go with the most current rule system. You know, otherwise, you're not necessarily going to meet new people. And it might be more difficult to meet those who want to go back, because some people do just feel the need to upgrade because it's an upgrade.
I totally ran into that when I was, I guess that's my reason for choosing a most recent edition. I played second edition D&D, and I went up to 3. Because when I formed this new gaming group filled with people who 90% of them had never played a role-playing game before, that was the exact time when 3rd edition came out. Of course, we bought 3rd edition. Right. I mean, you could get the whole thing in 2 books. You know, your Dungeon Master Guide and your
Player's Handbook.
Player's Handbook. Yeah. Well, and 3 books, Monster
Manual. Oh, yeah.
And then you're set. Good. It is a nice package. It was, everyone was on the same playing field as far as level of knowledge of the rules and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you know, that worked for us. But yeah, I'm still on the camp of just because it's the new thing.
You know, and that's something I want to stress. I'd like to run down kind of a list here of some reasons why it is good to upgrade and why I have upgraded in the past and would upgrade again. And I guess to really kind of summarize my point on the negative side is that I don't think upgrading is a bad idea. I'm not some curmudgeon who's like, well, you know, I'm old and I hate everything but Matlock.
But you are old and you do hate everything but Matlock.
That's because Matlock's awesome.
But, you know, I'm not the kind of person where it's like, I have my 1995 books and that's the ways I like it and nobody's going to shift me. That's not the case at all.
I work with that guy, by the way.
I'm sure we all know that guy. And I hope I'm not giving the impression that that's the kind of guy I am. What I'm against, Chad, is what you just stated, which is upgrading simply because it's there. Having some kind of neurotic compulsion that because this was just released, we must all buy and play this now, even though it may be a lesser product than the previous edition or the previous version. Right. Or if it may not even, it could just be competing games. The older game by a different company may be better than the newer game by the newer company. But here's some reasons why I have upgraded in the past, including a couple weeks ago and right now as I buy new books, and why I would upgrade again in the future. And the first one is if they introduce
better artwork.
Well, better content in general.
Yeah.
If, for example, and let's put rules aside here, we'll get to rules in a second, but if they enhance the setting, improve the artwork, improve the layout, put in more information that I can use to run a better game, these are reasons why I would upgrade. This is what kept me buying BattleTech books for so long, because I felt like I was getting value out of each book that came out. Yeah. And when they released new editions of the game, now granted, BattleTech editions were much more minor in nature than most game editions are. MechWarrior was major overhauls, but BattleTech itself was fairly minor. But nonetheless, I would still pick up those editions because I saw where they were adding value to my game. Same thing with third edition. I can look at, let's take the setting books here. The third edition manual for Forgotten Realms, even though I prefer what was going on in the timeline during the second edition Forgotten Realms, the third edition Forgotten Realms book is a hell of a lot better of a product than the box set was for Forgotten Realms and second edition.
I'm so glad that I make my own worlds and stories and stuff so I don't have to keep track of all this crap.
Well, but you know, it's other people have good ideas too.
And oh, so, totally. Well, like I said in my profile, I readily rip everybody off.
Yeah.
So
the second thing is new and genuine improvements to the rules. Mm-hmm. The rules make more sense. They're more clear. You need less errata sheets to play with, things like that. And one of the things that motivated me to upgrade from second edition D&D to third edition D&D was some people were able to make the case to me about why it was a better system. And there's things in it I like. And of course, these are always debatable, but there were things that I like. Like, for example, the wizard now got bonus spells based on intelligence, just like the cleric did for wisdom. So a first level wizard could do more than cast one magic missile and then go to bed for the rest of the adventure. That's just one example. There's a bunch of things like that. The consistent XP charts, because in prior editions of D&D, you did not have the same XP charts across classes. So you had classes that would be at radically different levels depending on their XP value. They changed that in third edition, and I like that. I like the idea that the characters were running more in parallel to each other. And of course, these are debatable. Someone could be listening to this and prefer second edition, and I don't have a problem with that.
Now, if they like first edition, you got to shank them with a screwdriver.
You know, Shadowrun was, if you want to use the term victim, but Shadowrun was a victim of that.
I was a victim of Shadowrun.
Where I'm a victim of love is what you are, my friend.
True.
But there were, in each subsequent edition, there were improvements to that rule system and streamlines of the rule system. It wasn't a tremendous stray from the base rules, but, you know, they realized wisely that they needed to fix certain things to help kind of smooth things over and make them run a little bit better. And that's what they did. And the nice part about that was that it didn't, because of the way they structured their source books, it didn't invalidate anything. You know, they kept the game continuity roughly the same. And when they had to change some things, they put, you know, in-game universe explanations as to why that was changing, which was nice.
Backing up a thought to the improved content, another example I just came up with is the whole Hunter thing. That I picked up Hunter Hunted, because I really liked the concept. I did not pick up Hunter the Reckoning because they changed the concept. You weren't playing a normal human anymore. But now with Hunter the Vigil, they've gone back more to the concept of Hunters Hunted. And on top of that, they have fleshed it out into a much fuller game with a much thicker book and a lot more information. And that's what motivated me to go out and pick it up, whereas I had not touched anything from New World of Darkness until this point. Chris, one you brought up before we turned on the mics, and you kind of brought this up again on the mics, so in a little bit of a different form, is sometimes you have social reasons to need to upgrade. And the example you gave off the mics was if you're involved in any kind of organized player group play event, then if they're moving to a new edition, you may have no choice but to move to a new edition. Or you also gave the examples if you're playing through your gaming shop and they've made the decision there that the games they're going to run are going to be in this edition or this setting or this particular company's rule set, then there's a reason why you really have to upgrade whether you want to or not.
That's right. You know, and Wizards did that with fourth edition. You know, they, when before fourth came out, they made it known for all their living, you know, Greyhawk campaigns that it was done. I mean, when fourth edition was released, that was it. They weren't going to support those living campaigns anymore and it was over. So, and they were going to upgrade then to Living Forgotten Realms, which was going to be fourth edition. And, you know, if you wanted to stay in that living thing, and for those people who go, you know, to a lot of conventions where they run living events, you know, you have no choice. You've got to upgrade. You can't go and bring your 3.5 version character, you know, and we went through the same thing when I was playing living events back then, when they did the upgrade from 3.0 to 3.5, you had to make that conversion. There was no two ways about it. You couldn't bring a previous edition character.
Chris, for someone who's never been a part of like organized play or anything like that, do you find that when they change versions like that, does the organized play overall, do you think it loses a lot of people?
Well, from 3.0 to 3.5, I can't really say, because the transition was pretty subtle. And, you know, so there really wasn't a lot of motivation to say, you know, screw this, I'm out of here. This is ridiculous. I'm not doing this anymore. You know, but 4E is indeed a fundamental change, you know, and there is no conversion. So you've got to make that new guy and you've got to start over. Now, granted, there are some of those Paizo is one. They're sticking with essentially that 3.5 rule set with their Pathfinder thing, and they're going to try and make a go of that. But from my old group, you know, they were very heavy into living when I was living up in Minnesota, and it got played a lot. And they did all the Living Greyhawk stuff, and they stuck with it, and they kept going with it. But I believe none of them are doing any living stuff now that it's fourth edition. They're not doing it. They're done. They're gonna do Pathfinder instead, because it's a rule set they're familiar with. They don't want to buy the new books. They just don't feel it's worth their investment. And since somebody has opened up an avenue for them that is very similar to what they were doing, they see no reason to make that upgrade. Somebody's offered them something that's just almost as good as what they were doing, so why change?
Do you think that from a marketing expert perspective, I'm going to put you on the hot seat again, Chris.
Hey, my chair's getting warm.
Do you think...
And it's not for the reasons you might think.
So, do you think that the upgrade from 3.5 to 4 was a good idea? And I don't want to value judgment, oh, the rules were great, or the rules sucked, or the game was great. From a marketing sort of player retention and new player, new business, and all that sort of business, and do you think it was a good idea?
It's tough, because it's a tough call to make, because like Pat had said, earlier, you know, my personal feeling was it was too soon. I mean, 3.5, you know, the gap between 3.0 and 3.5 was at least what, 7 years, 6 years. I mean, there was a decent enough gap, but then the gap between 3.5 and 4.0 was what, maybe 2 years tops, if I remember incorrectly. So it was too soon. I don't think that they fully considered their audience, in the sense that, you know, I don't think your average gamer can plop down over $100 for three brand new books. I just don't think they can, especially when that audience is getting older and they're getting kids and they're getting mortgages and they're getting other things that they need to spend that money on. I don't know if, you know, and I think they might also be getting hurt from the economy, but you can also argue the fact that they may actually benefit from the bad economy, but that's, you know, a large part of a larger debate. But I think it was too soon. I mean, it looks good. And the playability, like Pat said, it's certainly playable. It's a good rule system in that sense. But again, you think that they
ended up screwing some of their player base?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I know, you know, from my personal perspective, I'm not going to do it. I've got players that I'm trying to get back together with, and I have no reason to say, hey, we should all go out and try fourth edition. I'm just going to stick with 3.5 because, again, that's what I'm familiar with. And here's another reason to go back to why you necessarily shouldn't upgrade, although this is more particular to D&D than other gaming systems. There's a boatload of content out there that I haven't even gotten scratched the surface on.
Right.
And content that I own. I bought a bunch of adventures. I bought some, whether they were bargain bin stuff or stuff that I got when it was new releases. And I haven't played them yet.
And if you talk about 3.0 and 3.5, you also have so much stuff that was put out under the OGL. I mean, how many great adventures and settings were put out by people like our friend Daniel Perez, you know, over at mm-hmm. High Moon and such, that I doubt, I mean, once again, even the vast majority of us have even scratched the surface of that. If we switched to 4.0, would suddenly, you know, if we made that our real bread and butter, would suddenly be inaccessible to us. I think
and enterprising, you know, game masters, they can certainly pick up on that cheap available content and make that conversion, and it will work just fine, you know. But then again, but you've got the lazier guys who may not necessarily either A, they're lazy, or B, they ain't got the time or the inclination,
or they just don't like 4E. Like
4E.
Yes.
Well, yeah, you've got your Chads of the world.
So let me ask you guys this, because we've kind of beat the D&D thing to death, and frankly,
that's one thing I did not want to make this, and I think we strayed into is I did not want to make this a 4E debate.
Here's my question though for all of you guys. We've kind of beaten the 4E thing down, and you know, yeah, we kind of come to the consensus, at least among ourselves, that this maybe wasn't the greatest idea by TSR and Wizards of the Coast or whoever.
I
don't even care.
But you know what though? That said, if I had the opportunity to pick up a 4E player's handbook, say at a decent enough discount, I'd do it within a heartbeat. I'd gladly pick it up because at the core of that, I'm still a gamer. I still like the idea and appeal of new games. And
you're a D&D fanboy. Yes.
Well, but there's also that compulsion within me just as a human being living in this country. Hey, it's a new thing. I want to check out the new thing, which, you know, Dan had made reference to. We like new things. We like to try new things. And thus the reason, you know, why some people do make that upgrade.
Let me ask you a question.
Do it. Go ahead. Shoot.
You're not allowed to say the words D&D or bring it up with this answer. Give me an example of a successful and, in your guys' opinion, good version jump of any kind of game where there is a huge fundamental shift in the game to where it was either a new version or just like this big shift in the plot, the rules, the whatever, that you guys considered, yeah, it was put, there was enough time between versions, the rules upgrades were needed, the plot was advanced in a way that, you know, little supplements and novels couldn't do. They had to coalesce it all into one big thing.
Shadowrun 3-4. Well, with them making even just simple things like them making the Matrix wireless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've nothing but good things about Shadowrun 4th edition. That's an example. And I'm trying to pick ones more current. Going back further, I think Shadowrun 1-2 was similar. I mean, Shadowrun 1, I think it was a great concept, but it was horribly executed.
Atrocious.
Atrociously executed.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For me personally, and I don't want to get into the New World of Darkness versus Old World of Darkness thing, because there's probably a whole episode of material in that in and of itself. But what I would say in general is I do like the way they have reapproached mm-hmm. some of the particular subspecies. And I mentioned the hunters earlier, where they've gone back to making them regular humans.
Well, I like how they've gone from, instead of the sort of emo, gothy, sort of my parents don't understand me and I'm a cutter vampire, to more of the political power play, you know,
right,
power from the shadows type of thing that they're doing now, if I understand the new edition correctly. That way more appeals to me than the, you know, I sit in my parents' basement and listen to The Cure all day. But, you know, it's... So I think that one's a good shift.
Mom, I need new razors.
Yeah.
You know, I came up with two other reasons why you might want to upgrade versions, and these two are actually much more pragmatic. One is the physical decay of your existing material. I'm facing that one down now, where my old Battletech stuff is just so used and so beaten that...
Yes, all those owners of Technical Readout 3025 who actually have a working binder, please raise your hand.
Yeah. And that's why I'm... Now, of course, Catalyst...
Do you know I own about four copies of 3025?
I've got like two, but you know that's not going to be as bad now because Catalyst has started resupporting the traditional rule set, so it's not like I have to make the
choice. Except they're not going to have the Unseen Mechs, which are the Robotech stuff.
The point is, it's not like I have to make the choice between quitting the game or going over to Dark Ages. I can still, so it's really no hard choice there. But any other game, my second edition Shadowrun stuff is horribly beat up, which is, you know, the reason for the move to fourth edition is simply to get stuff that's physically usable.
I don't know. I'm holding your second edition here and duct tape. Yeah, nice. Excellent.
It's bound with duct tape. I mean, that's,
did you honestly duct tape?
You know, actually, I think someone else duct taped it for me because it was falling apart because I'm not a taper.
That's heresy. That is heresy.
But I think it's funny.
Another possible reason, and this kind of goes back to the content thing, is, and some people actually hate this, and this goes to the New World of Darkness, Old World of Darkness thing, but a reboot of the setting. That if you're someone who is new to the game, or if you're an old hat in the game who did not like the game's original direction, when they do a flat reboot of the setting, it gives you a chance to either see the game re-envisioned, or if you're not, you know, you're too new to this and everyone else knows dozens of novels and dozens of source books and material and you don't know jack, a reboot of the setting gives you an opportunity to jump in. Now, I realize that's a controversial one because in the process, you alienate and piss off the people who are fans of, followers of, and purchasers of the previous incarnation.
And this would be your Traveler fans.
So I'm not saying that this is necessarily always a good thing, but I'm saying it could be a reason to jump in depending on your circumstances and your opinion of the game's previous incarnation.
Chad, my pick for your answer, by the way, would be a game. It's a little known game, but it was pretty fun. It's called Bungeons and Braggins.
Okay.
Go ahead, Pat.
Okay.
Do you care to elaborate on that?
No, actually, you kind of stole my answer. I was going to say Shadowrun 2nd edition to 3rd edition. For me, because again, for basically the same reasons you had said for 3 to 4, it just was a rule streamline, and you know, just really kind of fixed a lot of things.
But I like Grottos and Goblins myself, but
Grottos and Mazes and Monsters.
Yeah, there you go.
Look out, Tom.
I'd say to answer Chad's question, I think, I'm not 100% up on the specs of it, but I think Deadlands went through a couple changes where I think that they made some pretty good improvements, but I think that was sort of growing pains in the fact that the first edition that was out had some issues, had some problems with it. And
the first game, the first genesis of it was a board game.
Yeah.
Like I don't even think it was a miniatures tabletop war game. I mean, it was a board game with little lead miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about
the chewy kind.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Great Rail War Robbery.
Great Rail War.
Yeah, something like that. I don't even know.
But yeah, so I think that's a good one that's seen some definite improvement. And then sort of go on, I guess, to answer some earlier questions that we had along the way. Like, I know in my group, when we switched, and again, this is going back to the D&D only because that's what we were playing.
No, D&D.
Not to harp on that.
You know, this is why Wizard of the Coast doesn't have a marketing department. It's because they don't need one. No.
Well, but yeah, like the same reason Kleenex doesn't need a marketing.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, disbarring Jack Thompson.
Or Thompson.
Oh, yes. Florida Bar, thank you. Yeah, good job.
Thank you very much.
You know, even but as of this recording, if you were told.
You know, the reason that we switched, I would say, is sort of going to the whole, well, it's what's new and it's cool. But I think I can sort of liken it to, I think we just sort of got bored with the system that we were playing. You know, it's like, okay, we've played this long enough. Let's try something new. And in fact, I would almost look at it as this. I would say that the change in going from 2nd to 3rd edition D&D, and even specifically more like from 3 and 3.5 to 4th edition, it's almost like playing another type of game. It's more like, okay, well, we've been playing D&D. Well, now let's play Deadlands. That's a vastly
different thing. That's a really good point, though.
You know, I mean, I almost look at it that way as switching editions is just playing a different game.
Yeah, you upgrade because... it's just the game's getting a little stale. Well, you want to spice it up. You want to change things up. Stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there, those are the two categorically huge exceptions that I would offer is if there's something wrong with the old game, either the content's broken, the rules are broken, or even it's just your experience. You're getting bored with the game. By all means, upgrade.
Mm-hmm. You have Fear the Boots permission. Yeah.
Yes, you may go. Secondly,
we allow it.
If the new edition or the new game really is better. You know, even if the old edition was fine, but the new edition is just better. It has better content, better layout, more streamlined rules. By all means, go out and do it. The only thing that really agitates me is when all somebody can do is show me a copyright date,
yeah.
And that's why I ought to upgrade.
Well, yeah. I think what agitates me the most is when I feel like I'm getting screwed. It's too soon, or the changes are minor, or it's just a layout change, a new art, or, you know, it's like you look at it, it's like, they did change everything, but was it really necessary? And I feel that, you know, it's a corporate screw job.
That seems like that's what 3 and 3.5 was. Yeah, that was just the minor whatever. You know, even from second to third edition, it was different, but not even as nearly as enough as going from the third edition iterations to 4. It's just a different game. Just like, you know, like I said, I would liken it unto switching from playing fantasy to playing a almost like a Shadowrun type of a game.
I think
just
a lot of
genre
these,
change, or, you know, it's just totally different.
I think a lot of these companies they're small ones, don't have a marketing department and don't have like brand managers and that sort of thing.
Well, oh goodness, no.
Tell them, hey guys, you know, while you have some cool ideas, we just put out the new edition of this book 6 months ago.
Well,
we don't need to go to second edition.
Even within the big companies, and I'm not going to give any names because on many of
give names.
I've been sworn to secrecy. But
you're going to divulge the secrets here.
Well, I'm not going to name names, but conceptually, I've been told by people even within the big companies a lot of times, there's a lot of internal dissent on the choices made for dropping new editions or rebooting games or revising games.
But the company has to show a unified front.
And so
they fight on the inside and then on the outside.
But even then, there's a lot of disagreement there. Because I remember earlier in the show, Chad, you were saying, well, that's the job of the marketing department. And some of those stories started going through my head. It was like, well, you should hear some of those debates that go on about sometimes the marketing department's not involved, or sometimes they're...
But we don't want to go the other way, too. We don't want a game that's designed by the marketing department either.
Right.
You know, because I remember, you know, I was doing reviews. I was reading reviews on video cards because I built a computer and I was building some computers for some friends and stuff. I was reading the reviews on, and one of the reviews on the video card said, this card, when you look at the specs, is identical in every single level of detail to the previous generation card that's $50 to $75 less. This card was designed by the marketing department. They made the card red, they put a cool looking fan and lights on it, and they called it Extreme, and then they charged $75 more for it.
Yeah, and that's that is just typical, you know, corporate.
Yeah, yeah. So ideology. You don't want to go the other way and have a game designed by the marketing department.
Right.
So,
all right, we'll go ahead and sign this out on that note. Before we close this out, I do want to send a shout out to a gentleman over at the D21 game site who was asking a question directed towards us about why Worldwide Wing Night is not a weekend long affair. And I want to respond first by telling you that Worldwide Wing Night is like Christmas. Beer and chicken wings have no season.
No.
And
they have seasoning.
Yes, but no season. Worldwide Wing Night is a reminder of a deeper truth, which is that you should be consuming beer and chicken wings all year long.
Yes.
So, sir, it's not a weekend long because it should be a year long.
Right.
Now, the reason we do it on Saturday is really two reasons. One is to exclude Orthodox Jews.
Yes. Such as Daniel Perez. No,
actually, the more honest reason is when we had them on Friday nights or tried to run them over a weekend, what we found was too many people, especially coming from a couple hours away. it was a real struggle for them to get out of work and to make it over to our location on a Friday night. But if we had it on a Saturday, that gave them a lot more time to get out here and then get back home. So that's the reason it's only on a Saturday. But the truth is, this is supposed to be a reminder of the joy of living, the joy of gaming, and the joy of gaming culture. So,
and
sir,
the joy of being drunk.
Yes, it's not a weekend long event. It should be a year long event. We just have these every few Saturdays a year to remind you of a truth that you should always be holding near and dear.
That was very heartfelt.
That's your dedication here from Delilah. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Later. Yeah. Later days.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.